We will call the House Tax Committee to order. The legislative assistant will note the roll. Today, we are keeping a tradition in that when I started out in 1999 as Commerce Chair for those three terms, as Ag Chair, I always hear DFL bills first, and we have an awesome one today, I would say. And just so you know, I can hear this bill because I have purchased my marijuana stamps. These will be collector's items after we've done with your bill. Okay, so with that, do we have some minutes? Or okay, not right now. Okay, that's fine. Okay, so let's start out. I think what we should do, though, is we have some very important people in the room here that I'd like to acknowledge. If the gentleman to my right could take it away.
All right.
And, sir, maybe if we could get a name, who their state rep is. If you don't know, I'm putting you on the spot. So think quick here. Who's your state rep? And then your high school's team mascot is the most important thing.
My name is Lila Schwartz. Erica Schwartz, actually, is our representative nuclear in the Mankato area. Where I'm from, I go to Mankato West. Technically, our mascot's the Scarlets, but that's obviously not a mascot. So two of the senior guys dress up like bananas.
It could be the University of California, Santa Cruz. They're banana slugs. Those are kind of ugly, though. Bananas are fine. Yes.
My name is Mercedes. I'm from Pittston High School. My representative is Steve Gander, and our mascot is the Iron.
My name is Griffin Larson. I'm from Minneapolis South High School. Our mascot is the Tigers, and then, I live in representative Central Marinas District.
Yeah. Good morning. My name is Danielle Lopez-Morian. I live in District 32A. My representative is Nolan West. I go to St. Ives High. Our mascot is a ball nicknamed Aggie Bowl.
Good morning, I'm Dia Rocker. I am from Rochester Mayo High School. We are the Spartans, and my representative is Tito Highboy.
Hi, I'm Amelia Schultz. My representative is Mike Freebird, and I go to Hopkins High School, and we're the Royals.
I'm Keegan Clares. I go to Orlando High School. Our mascot is the Spartan, and my representative is Kristen Evans.
Oh. All right.
Thank you. Welcome to the Capitol here.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention to the young man from South High School, I graduated from South High School, as did Representative Greenman, Representative Sensenmura. So we're well represented here. Hopefully you'll join us someday. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wow. Thank you, Chair Gomez. Impressive. Why don't we start? I'd like to have some member introductions and basically, you know, not a 10-minute speech, but your name, where your district is, and why you want to be on the tax committee. Well, that's a dumb question. Everybody wants to be on the tax committee. So in the last committee, they talked about if you were a tree, what kind would it be? just say something nice about yourself. Let's start way back there, and we'll go around, and we're not going to split members from staff, so we'll just go all the way around like this, and then up with Chair Joachim and back up this way. Representative Harder.
Good morning. I am Representative Bobby Harder. I represent House District 17B, as in Bobby, and that would be most of Sibley County and parts of Carver and McLeod. And the reason why I'm on this committee, I'm happy to be here, is because we need to lower our taxes. Thank you.
Jeff Witte. I represent 57B Lakeville. Reason I'm on the tax committee is the chair said the best committee.
Good morning, Representative Cal Warwis from the heart of the Iron Range, District 7B. And I'm on the tax committee because I have a lot of people concerned about property taxes in my district and mineral taxes and things like that. So I'm very glad to be here.
Wayne Johnson, Representative 41A, first time elected. It's Washington County. It goes from the southern part of Washington County, Cottage Grove, all the way up to Grant in various different creative ways. Wanted to be on taxes just because I was 4 years a county commissioner. I saw a lot of actions that were being taken here that affected property taxes for homeowners and stuff like that, so I wanted to get involved. So thank you.
I'm Representative Mike Wiener, center part of the state, Todd County, Wadena County. Capricorn. My favorite color is blue, and I like rainbows.
Representative Drew Roach, District 58B, covers areas of Dakota, Rice, and Goodhue County on tax committee because, like a lot of my colleagues here, we want to cut taxes. So looking forward to doing it.
Patty Anderson, 33A, sort of northwestern Washington County, I guess is the best description. I'm on taxes because we're pushing people out of Minnesota due to our tax system.
Representative Kristen Robbins, 37A, which is Western Maple Grove and all of Corcoran, Medina, Greenfield, Independence, Loretto, and Maple Plain. And I love taxes. Even though I have my own committee, I still think this is my favorite committee. I'm an economist, and I just think we can do so much more to drive economic growth in this state.
Representative Jim Joy, out of 4B, Clay County, Becker County. I'm on taxes, one, because I hear we get treats every once in a while. Number two, I want to keep everybody in Minnesota and not give North Dakota any of our people.
I'm Casey Peterson, subbing for today for Sam Moyer.
Greg Davids, District 26B. My district borders Iowa and Wisconsin. And in the news lately, you've probably heard, like I said, in Commerce Committee, there's a senator from Ankeny, Iowa, that has a bill in to purchase the nine lower counties in Minnesota. And so I don't know if I'll be here long, my farmland is in Fillmore County. That's a first-tier county, so I've always wanted to own Iowa farmland, and I guess in that case I could, if that's the case. But no, I'm going to vote no because I want to be able to co-chair this committee with Chair Gomez.
I'm Jennifer Goblish. I'm the committee legislative assistant. I've moved 23 times. I've paid taxes in 23 different locations around the world.
That's going to be a record. My name is Aisha Gomez. I represent the south side of Minneapolis, District 62A. It's my fourth term, and I've been on taxes the whole time. I'm the DFL lead. And the tax committee is, as you may have heard, the best committee and different than other committees. And, you know, a couple of the reasons that I care about tax policy is because I believe that, you know, taxes are how we care for each other in a society. It's how we buy the things that people need for the basics of their lives. And the interests of the very wealthy and corporations have been amply represented in the development of our tax code. And you can see it all over the place if you look through it. And I believe that we need strong voices for working people, working class people, people who are struggling to get by in the current economic order. And so that's why I love taxes.
So my name is Patrick McQuillan, and I'm the House DFL Caucus staff for taxes.
Good morning, everyone. I'm State Representative Kalee Herr, and I represent 64A in St. Paul. That's from the river to the cathedral and south of 94 to St. Clair, best district. And I love taxes. I'm back on taxes. The reason I love it is for all the same reason Chair Gomez said, but also because this is one thing stated in our Constitution that we should all take really seriously about how we take this job and what we do here, and I really love the responsibility of doing so.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Matt Norris. I've got the privilege of representing District 32B, which is the cities of Blaine and Lexington. And one of the reasons I love the Taxes Committee is just the breadth of the topics that we get to discuss and can fall within our jurisdiction here in the Taxes Committee.
Mike Freiberg, I represent all of Golden Valley and Robbinsdale, parts of Crystal and Plymouth. I've heard Taxes is the best committee, so I want to find out if that's true.
It is.
Zach Stevenson, I represent the Halloween capital of the world, Anoka, and my hometown of Coon Rapids in the Minnesota legislature. I got on the tax committee mostly to annoy Chair Gomez, which is why it's so inconvenient that I agreed with everything she said just now. You really got to stop that.
Good morning. My name is Liz Lee. I represent the east side of St. Paul, and like a lot of you, I also have been hearing for the last couple of years about high property taxes. And so, you know, I agree with everything that Rep. Gomez said, but I want to make sure that people's tax dollars are working for them because we live in a society that values rule of law and like making sure we pave our roads, right? And so that means we have to pay taxes, but want to make sure that people get their money's worth. And of course, always on this pursuit of what it means, or the definition of fair share, because I want to know what that is too. And so hopefully, you know, we'll take a couple more steps towards that this session.
I'm State Representative Steve Elkins. I represent the western half of Bloomington. This is my second term on this committee. And I completely nerd out on all things related to local government finance, having spent 20 years in local and regional government. And I just love to observe the interplay between Chair Davids and Chair Gomez. This really is a fun committee.
Hi, everybody. Representative Leish Kozlowski. I represent 8B Utiful, Duluth, Minnesota. You've got a couple local government nerds here, so I appreciate that. I really wanted to be on tax committee. I ditched the bonding committee. Sorry to you all at the same time. But, you know, I live and represent Duluth, but I also hail from the Grand Portage and Fond du Lac reservations. And growing up and being immersed in, you know, a word that we use is Mata Uking, which is how Representative Gomez eloquently put it, but it is just about the equitable distribution of resources. We live in a community, in a state, and in a country that has abundant resources, and making sure that everybody has what they need to survive and thrive and sustain a really good life. So glad to be here.
Hi, I'm Representative Cheryl Joaquin. I represent all of Hopkins, half of two precincts in St. Louis Park and about a quarter of Edina. And this is my 11th year, and I think every year I've either been on property taxes or tax committee and got bitten by the bug of deep diving into issues that affect all our levels of government, and also as the education finance lead, making sure that we have the money to fulfill our constitutional obligation to fund our schools.
I'm Representative Jess Hansen. I represent District 55A down in Savage in Northwest Burnsville in the Southwest Metro. And I joined taxes because Chair Gomez convinced me to do it. And I'm one of the only solo parents in the legislature. And so making sure we understand how our taxes help and support parents who are raising their kids alone is really important to me.
I'm John Hewitt. I represent Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Eagan. I feel like I've been brought to the varsity here. I've been on property taxes for a number of years. I got pulled off the bench here, so I'm really excited. One of my areas of focus is definitely, and it's no secret to the whole house here, is the identifying EMS as a public safety entity, and now how do we fund that entity? So I'm looking for creative ways and open for suggestions. Thank you.
I'm Sean Haydorn. I have been with GFL Research for Taxes since 2019.
Hello, Representative Andy Smith. I represent District 25B, Rochester, Minnesota. I am on tax committee for the second time, and I just can't get enough of sales tax exemptions for construction materials and local municipal projects. So I'm so glad to be back here.
Welcome. Hello, I'm Jake Cowan, and I'm the GOP tax researcher.
I'm Alex Hagler. I'm with House Research.
Hi, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal.
Chris Klayman, House Research. Chris Wozenski, I represent the good people of Lyon, Flock of Parl, Yellow Medicine, and a sliver of Chippewa County down in southwest Minnesota. and I have no personality, and so my goal was to be on a committee where the two chairs, Aisha Gomez and Greg Davids, have the best personality, and maybe I can learn something from them. So.
Hello, my name is Erica Schwartz. I represent Neclet County 18A, which is North Mankato, St. Peter, Neclet, Cortland, and Kasota Township. I decided to join taxes because I heard it was the best committee to be on, but also as a formal single parent, I know the frustration, the financial burdens of high property taxes. So I would think we will get together and see what we can lower taxes and use our current taxes wisely. Thank you.
And thank you to everyone, members, staff, researchers. We have an agenda today of three bills, but first of all, I've had several people ask me where are the tax rules, and I think you see them sitting right up here. I'm including Jennifer, too. So the rules, we don't have any. We kind of Chair Gomez and I will take care of stuff. So again, DFL heard first. This is not, I wanted to make sure that there were no bill, the DFL bills we hear first are to hear and pass, not to hear and never hear from them again. Chair Gomez and I have talked a bit about, offline, about what do we do with property taxes. The way the legislature set up, we do not have the property tax committee. And so all the property tax issues will come through committee. I threw out the suggestion, and I'd like input from everyone that has interest in the property taxes, that maybe, and this is, we haven't agreed on anything, but possibly we have maybe three DFLers, three Republicans together to have kind of an informal working group on property taxes, because you think sales tax exemptions, Representative Smith or something, try all the property tax bills. I mean, there's a lot of them. And I think it would probably serve the committee well, and we will finalize that. Would be good to have a working group set up a time. I know it's hard to find times to go through the property tax and then bring a report back to the full committee on what we should be doing on property taxes. And I would also say, as I suggested to the Republican caucus, I'll suggest it to the DFL caucus too, if you have, I don't say little local bills because they're big locally, if you have local bills that you want heard, bring them to Chair Gomez, bring them to myself, and let's really get some of those things going for your local communities. And Duluth, I love Duluth. Two of my three daughters are Bulldogs, and it's a great university on a great lake. Is that what they say, something like that? So we love to go up there. Okay, so that being said, let's start out with the first bill. So if Representative Hansen could go to the presentation table, and after this bill, I don't think we'll need these stamps anymore, will we? So they're collector's items. Mm-hmm. Soon to be. So what are they? I'm sorry. What are they for? Well, we'll let Representative Hansen. I mean, why do we have to have a stamp for marijuana? I don't know. Okay. Welcome to the committee. Representative Hansen moves House File 308, and this one will be moving to lay it over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And if we're having trouble in an omnibus bill, I just want to maybe have this one go out separately and get this thing passed. We need to do this. Okay. Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, everybody, and thank you, Chair and members. House File 308 was before you in March of last year, and before I had the honor of joining this committee, of course. But if we recall, this was the bill that prompted a pretty jovial and enlightening conversation about the conundrum that Chair Davids felt that this would put the Department of Revenue in. And when our resident historian gave us some background about the arrest of Al Capone for tax evasion. So it was a fun hearing. If you didn't watch that one, I would suggest to go back and watch that. But in all seriousness, I do want to say before I get going that this is not the highest priority for the average Minnesotan, and I recognize that. But I know a lot of folks are struggling to make ends meet. But I am grateful that I get to present this bill before this committee. It's historically had bipartisan support, and I look forward to that again. So this bill will repeal the tax on illegal controlled substances and the tax on illegal cannabis. Cannabis taxes are now addressed in 295.81, and the criminal penalties as such are also addressed in other statutes. Our current statute on this expects that people selling illegal drugs purchase stamps from the Department of Revenue upon the sale of their illegal drugs. As I'm sure you can imagine, showing up at the Department of Revenue to pay taxes on your illegal drug sales is probably not the most common practice. And as such, this tax has generated no notable revenue since its enactment in 1986, other than purchases by collectors like the Honorable Chair Davids. It's not a common practice for prosecutors to use this statute either, and even in those cases, the revenue is only generated upon the successful prosecution of another offense that this was tacked onto. Minnesota County attorneys were aware of this bill last year, and at that time, they did not have any official position, and similarly, the Department of Revenue also did not have an official position, but they testified last year that this was rarely used, was not used at all in 23, and that they did not use this statute on their own independently without county attorneys or law enforcement involved. So the forecasted amount in this is really nominal. It's not very predictable or easy to forecast either. This has passed through committees with bipartisan support before, and I hope it can maintain its bipartisan support this session. And with that, I will conclude and stay for any questions.
Well, thank you very much. So what you're saying is illegal drug dealers are supposed to come to the Department of Revenue and pay a tax on their illegal drugs. Do I have that right?
Correct, Chair Davids.
You know, I ran on this. this is... So is there anyone, any questions for members? And kind of the format we use is questions for members, and then we go to folks in the audience who testify on behalf of the bill. We don't go to people that want to testify against the bill. We go to people who have concerns about the bill. Against is so harsh. And then we go to the department if they wish to bring anything forward. And then we will, on this one, it'll be laid over for possible inclusion. So any questions for members? I think Representative Hansen did a great job describing. I mean, that's what it is. That's what we're doing here. So, okay, anyone that wish to testify on behalf of the bill, please come forward.
Hello. Some of you are going to be very sick of me today. My name is Rihanna Lee. I'm the Legislative and Coalitions Director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota, and we would like to express support for this bill. Since its inception, it's generated essentially zero revenue, and it really highlights the impracticality and futility of taxing something like this. I mean, it's just silly. It places an unnecessary burden on law enforcement agencies and the criminal justice system when they're tasked with enforcing something that essentially just does not happen. And it's also, while it's rarely used, it is still a tactic that prosecutors can use to increase charges against individuals accused of drug crimes. And we really, you know, at our core, we believe in reducing the overreach and bureaucracy of government, and we don't like to see gotcha statutes like this. So we thank Representative Hansen for coming forward with this and urge your support.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else for the bill? Anyone with concerns about the bill? Okay, so great job, Representative Hansen. We will lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the honor of his tax bill. Item next is Representative Johnson. And Representative Johnson, let's go with Representative Engen first because you're on the committee. He has other things to do. So let's go down to House File 18. And I believe there's an amendment on this one. So let's go to 18. And I'll also do that if we have a couple of things. If we have members that are not on the committee, I think it's good to hear their bills and get them on their way. And also, when you bring in witnesses, the first question will be, are you more than 50 miles from here? If we get kind of bunched up, then we're going to run out of time. We do want to get the testimony from the witnesses that have driven a ways. And then because the other folks and like the lobbyists or roadies and groupies, isn't it? Something like
that.
Yeah, that's what we call them. And we love them dearly. they are to be here, and so we would, nothing personal, but we would get citizens that have driven from quite a ways away, and then citizen testimony, and then we really do appreciate the government relations folks that bring a lot of information to the committee. So with that, I will move House File 18. Representative Engen, could you please describe your bill? And I thought there was an amendment somewhere, isn't there? Oh, yeah, got it right here. Okay, very good. That might not be in your packets. That might be separate. Okay, to the bill, Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And while I'm missing Judiciary Committee right now, this does seem like the most fun committee. So I can nestle up right next to Jim Joy there after we're done here, if that's all right with you. But I'll explain my bill here. It's pretty simple. This is going to make Minnesota a better state to raise a family and to start a family or expand a family. Since 2016, we've seen a 20% increase in the cost of raising a child throughout the nation. And it's actually at $240,000 by the time that you hit 18. So what we're trying to do through this bill is expand those infant care items that parents are needing to purchase to start a family or to expand a family. And I'm going to read here a quote from the CBS article from September 10th of last year that I shared with you guys. It should be in your packets. It says that 51% of parents say that they suffer anxiety due to not having enough money to support their family. That's sad. There's more that we should be doing to support everyday folks who are just trying to raise a family here in the state, and I think that this bill aims at doing just that. The overall revenue estimate is around $10 million. And for returning members, I know that we had had very, very broad support on this bill in both the House and the Senate last biennium. So hoping to provide that relief for families and would yield for any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mangan. Let's go to the amendment so then when people come testify, we'll know what we're testifying to. I believe Chair Gomez has the DE-1 amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair Davids.
Chair Gomez moves the DE-1 amendment to your amendment. Chair Gomez.
Thank you so much, and thanks to Representative Engen for bringing this bill forward. I think that the issue that you identify is real, like the cost of raising a child is enormous, and it keeps going up, and it's, you know, it's a major burden and a major challenge. You know, Representative Hansen talked about her interest in helping support solo families and or solo parents, and you know, we all have a shared interest in that. The DE-1, instead of doing a blanket sales tax exemption for baby products, it instead beefs up our nation-leading child tax credit. So in the 2023 session, you know, we established a credit of $1,750 per child in Minnesota, kind of with income that was income targeted. And so really acknowledging the fact that the cost, the burden of the cost of raising a child doesn't fall on Minnesotans equally. People who are, you know, lower wage workers just have really immense challenges. And I would say that, you know, the increase in the cost of raising a child that Representative Engen identifies is really not about sales taxes on bassinets. It's about things like the cost of child care and, you know, other issues that we really have to take a serious look at addressing. And this this kind of blanket tax exemption on baby products, in that it's not targeted and it's not, you know, it's not addressing child care costs, which are like kind of probably the main driver of the economic burden of raising kids. It is the kind of thing that, you know, we're spending $20 million potentially on this, which is a big chunk of money when we're talking about a deficit in the out biennium. And we really have to take a close look when we're spending money with an end in mind. In this case, addressing cost burden for families. Is this the best use of $20 million? So, you know, if this, like tax exemptions do, because they are not income targeted, and because they are not actually, like they apply equally to all products. So this covers bassinets, cribs, strollers. So that means, you know, there's a company called Suomo, which I didn't know about until I started Googling this. They sell a very modest white plastic bassinet for 14,000 pounds, which is $17,390. But they also have a gold-plated bassinet that they sell for $61,803. So the tax liability, if you were to buy a $61,000 gold-plated bassinet, would be over $4,000. You can also go to, you know, your local Target or Walmart and buy a bassinet for $26. On that purchase, you would garner a savings of $1.80 in sales taxes. And what, which family is going to save $4,000 versus which family is going to save $1.80 on this bill? Whether you buy like a Costco stroller or the $10,000 Gucci model, that's like the, if you get the like the stroller with the car seat that you put in, you get up around $8,000-$10,000 for a Gucci stroller. So, you know, those are sort of ridiculous examples, but when we're doing like a blanket sales tax exemption, we do have to think about who the benefits are going to. And, you know, wealthy people will spend a lot more money on these items. I can just speak for myself. I have a 12-year-old kid. I don't think that I spent a dime on a bassinet, a crib, a mattress, any of these items, because, like, I got them for free from my friend who had a kid before me. I didn't have the resources to go and buy the Gucci stroller. And so I personally, as a young parent, wouldn't have benefited from this tax exemption at all. So I'm going to withdraw my amendment, but I guess I just think that when we're talking about solving a problem, which is a problem, right? The cost of raising a child in Minnesota right now, which is presenting a serious burden to people, we have to ensure that the public dollars that we are spending and tax cuts and exemptions are spending. They are spending of the public dollars. We have to ensure that we're doing that in a way that actually addresses the issue and doesn't just kind of send money to something that, that doesn't necessarily target the folks who could most benefit from that spending of public money. So withdrawing my amendment, but I appreciate the chance to have the conversation, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment, the DE1 amendment, has been withdrawn. I want to back up here just a little bit because I always go people for, people concerns, and the department on the first bill that we laid over, I never went to the department. Would the department like to have any comments on that bill? It'd be fun. Okay. So we will get back to Representative Engen's bill. Member questions. Any questions from members? Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Representative Engen, looking at the numbers, what kind of savings would families see in your typical family?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Witte. I actually have a list here just off of Target.com. This isn't Gucci bassinets or strollers or cribs. I know not many parents that I know of are purchasing those items, but we got a Sorel loose crib at $595, and after tax, that would be $635.91, a savings of nearly $50, $40.91. Sealy baby crib mattress, this was their most basic model, and that was $129.99, after tax, $138.93, a savings of $9.94. Bob Gear stroller and car seat, this was a higher end model, but mid-tier higher end. And that was priced at $849.99. And after tax, it was $908.43 for a savings of $58.44. Dr. Brown's 8-ounce baby bottles. These are not gold-plated. These are not the highest-end model. But those are $30. And after taxes, it's $33.02. So we're seeing some real savings. And just off of the 7 items that I just listed, we're looking at $138 of savings for parents. And so I think that that's real money that's going back into the pockets of folks who are most impacted by sales taxes, which even the Minnesota Reformer April 4th of 2023, the Minnesota Reformer is citing that sales taxes are one of the most regressive taxes that you can pass to somebody. So I think that this is a way that we can support families, and I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Representative Witte, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Engen, thank you for bringing this forward. I was just looking up when this was first brought to the legislature and made law, and it was after all my kids were born. Would have been great to have the basics that you listed in the original bill. Just wondering how you chose the items for the expansion, because some of them do have much higher price tags than what is in the underlying bill.
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Joachim. Being a new father myself, going to Target with my wife and seeing all the items that not only I'm purchasing, but friends and peers of ours are also purchasing, that influenced my decision. These are young families themselves who are saying, yeah, what about this? And so I jotted it down and made sure to make a note of it. But I'm always open to expansions if that's something that you'd like to explore.
Representative?
Chair Davids, Representative Engen, thank you. Actually, I was looking at deleting some of the higher cost items, but we can take that conversation offline if you'd like.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Engen, this is an interesting bill. I'm just kind of curious because it does, you know, I fit more in the cycle with Chair Gomez to be, you know, I have three boys and that third one, his mattress worked fine. Mm-hmm. but the thing that I'm wondering about, you know, because if you're looking at luxurious stuff like Chair Gomez went into, are you willing to look at amending the bill to, like, cut it off at a certain level, saying, hey, you know, this is excessive? I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, I'd be more, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt. Yeah, I'd be more than open to an amendment for exclusion of Gucci-based items. But I think most of the things that are listed here, if you go to any real retail store, Costco, Walmart, Target, some of the stores that you're purchasing these items at, they're not going to be those gold-plated ones that we had discussed. But offline, I'd be more than happy to discuss those possible changes.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Engen. I'm, as a solo mom, I'm just kind of curious why we're stopping at babies if the goal is to help families. I have a 13-year-old who wears size 13 shoes, and he's been going up in a shoe size every year with his age, and he likes fancy shoes to stay cool at school. And so I think, you know, trying to make sure that he at least has some shoes on his feet that fit him is far more expensive than I experienced when I had my son or my daughter at 17 years old. And I think I'm just kind of curious, why are we stopping at babies and not also helping children who are in later ages?
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. I'd be more than willing to expand this list. I know that I also have a bill for school supplies, full elimination of sales taxes on school supplies. And I know while shoes are already not taxed here in the state of Minnesota, would love to talk to you offline about expanding this list because, quite frankly, after increasing taxes on families, $10.5 billion, I'm more than willing to expand that list if it's going to provide real relief for families across the state.
Representative Hansen.
I have no follow-up, Chair. Okay. Thank you.
Any other member questions? If not, Representative Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know Rep. Hansen's question is maybe a little bit rhetorical, but I think one of the reasons why you would limit it is because, you know, obviously as children grow, the use of those items wouldn't necessarily be dedicated to a child's use, an adult could use them, where a baby item is pretty specific. And so by curtailing it to child use, those items are only going to be used. I mean, an adult is not going to use a bassinet, but an adult could use a full-size bed. And so I think that's why you primarily would focus this as a, it's easier enforcement. And, yeah, that's my answer.
Thank you, Representative. Okay, any other member questions? With that, we will go to, we have a list, Sarah Gengelhoff and Maggie Henge. Let's go with Sarah first, if we could. Come on up to the table. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, please.
Chair Davids, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak on House File 18. My name is Sarah Gengelhoff, and I'm representing the Women's Foundation of Minnesota as their Director of Advocacy and Innovation and as a mother myself. We're a community foundation that conducts research on how women and girls are faring in Minnesota, and we provide grants to nonprofits across the state to help more women and their families be safe, healthy, and prosperous. It's through this research reflected in our 2024 Status of Women and Girls in Minnesota report that we find that families today are facing extraordinary barriers to achieving economic stability. In addition to nationally skyrocketing housing prices and food costs, working families must also budget for the immense cost of daycare. Center-based infant care in Minnesota is actually more than the annual cost of college tuition at the University of Minnesota. The sales tax on baby products affects all families, regardless of income, but it has a disparate impact on women and single female-headed households. While Minnesota is a national leader in women's workforce participation, absolutely, women here still earn 81 cents to the dollar that men earn. That's almost $500,000 lost over the course of a career. And this gender wage gap is more stark for women of color, who lose more than $1 million over a lifetime. The overall poverty rate in Minnesota is lower than the national average. However, single mothers' income levels across racial and ethnic, rural, and urban areas fall far short of the cost of living. Paying a tax on already expensive yet essential items compound the burden on these families. The Women's Foundation of Minnesota commends Representative Engen for recognizing the challenges facing families today and bringing this bill forward. This bill would add to the tax exemption items like baby utensils and baby wipes, but it would also now include the higher cost item for infants, things like car seats and cribs and strollers. With this bill and with policies that also support the realities of parenting, we can move the needle towards creating a more welcoming and supportive state for all families and give all children a better start. We urge you to support House File 18. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for the testifier from the members? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Lee.
Yes.
That's okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm rather short, so my hand doesn't expand very long. Thank you to the witnesses. I just wanted to ask, maybe if you could talk a little bit about how this would work, because I'm curious what the value of is for something like the child tax credit, which sends cash to parents versus asking parents to spend more to save more, which sounds a lot like like a rewards program that you might have with your local stores. Just wondering what that value is.
Ms. Gengelhoff?
Yeah, well, I would say that the difference between that and this is that this shows up immediately at the cash register for someone going to buy these supplies. Also, we can expect that people have these networks where they're able to get cribs and bassinets. I know I was gifted a crib which actually contained lead in it because it was so old in the paint. So this allows people to go out and get safe products that are new if they so wish, if they so need to, and it allows them to do that on their own timetable immediately when they need the items.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, and I think I don't know if Rep. Gomez wants to maybe talk a little bit about this, but this is also why we kind of restructured the child tax credit to also have upfront payments, understanding that we don't want parents to wait for an entire year to see the benefits of a child tax credit and really getting those direct cash payments.
Chair Gomez, any thoughts? Or?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we did pass last year in our final bill, we funded the ability for the Department of Revenue to send periodic advance payments out to families who receive the child tax credit. And so, you know, and like I said, I mean, that is really a way of spending public money that is very targeted to those lowest income Minnesotans, the families who really need the help the most, who are facing the highest cost burden. And so, you know, that was just my our kind of point on this is that there are there are ways to spend public money that's targeted to those who need it the most, and there are ways to spend public money in a way that's very general and diffuse, and this is one of those very general and diffuse ways to spend public money.
Representative Lee.
Thanks.
Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point as well, I know the child tax credit is terrific, and we should look to expand it. I think if that 1790 bill introduction number were to be amended as it currently sits at 1750, I'd be more than open to that. But currently, we also have limits that are keeping a lot of people away from being able to actually benefit from the child tax credit. Right now, if you work a part-time job, 30 hours a week, $17 an hour, you're already considered too wealthy for that child tax credit. So this is that immediate relief that my testifier had referred to, and that's why we're going with this model as well.
Any other questions for the testifier? If not, we thank you very much, and we will now move on to Maggie Hange. I hope I said that right. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Davids. My name is Maggie Hange, and I am here on behalf of the Minnesota Catholic Conference. I'm a policy associate with the Minnesota Catholic Conference, here to share support for HF 18, the elimination of sales tax on these essential baby items. When a young couple is considering starting a family, or when a woman finds herself in an unexpected pregnancy, there's no doubt that the startup cost on items like cribs, car seats, strollers, and other things we've been talking about here are pretty daunting. A new parent faces the brunt of these costs more than anyone, especially at times when inflation is higher. When looking at the cost, and Rep. Engen mentioned these, when looking at the cost of some of the items in the bill, a quick search on places like Amazon or Target, you could spend nearly $2,000 on the items outlined in the bill and save over $100 if the state sales tax is eliminated. Though over $100 out of nearly $2,000 doesn't seem like an overwhelming number, it can make a big difference in the lives of new families. With that savings, the parents could in turn purchase a crib or mattress or sheets or nearly pay for their changing table. They could purchase something that might be safer for their child. Eliminating this tax is particularly vital for our low-income families who are often living paycheck to paycheck and are more impacted by inflation. A small tax cut for the state could make a life-saving difference for a family who could now afford that safe crib or safe car seat rather than getting those already used in a neighborhood swap and maybe close to expiring, as those things do have expiration dates. Minnesota's facing a demographic cliff. We have not had replacement fertility rates since 2006, according to the Minnesota State Demographic Center. And with increasingly low birth rates, offering a small but impactful solution to families, like eliminating the state sales tax on essential baby items, could help lessen some of the fear felt by prospective parents. And it's not going to have a significant impact on the state budget. And in addition to key mechanisms such as the child tax credit that we've been champions of, this modest proposal would help all families, including low-income families. So we hope that everyone can get behind putting families first and help parents of infants by easing the cost of these necessary items. And we encourage you to vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier for members? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify? We've got the two first folks who are in the affirmative. Anyone with concerns? Go to the department. Nothing at this time? Okay. Okay, so we always, in this committee, we always want to have the department have a kind of a seat at the table. Representative Herr. Chair Herr.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And I guess I don't know if this is necessarily a question for Representative Engen or maybe for this committee, is that I think that the heart of what Representative Engen is trying to do, I'm very much supportive of that. I often think about, though, that those who will know, like when we do something in taxes, how does community learn that something is now going to benefit them when it's something like a, you know, tax exemption like this? And I'm often pained by knowing that, like, when I think about my community, I don't think I've ever once heard someone say, I'm going to buy something or not buy something because I might not have to pay taxes on this, that they are literally in survival mode. And even my husband and I, that we were both professionals, but we were first generation to go to college, first generation to actually get professional jobs. And we had to find ways to buy all of our baby products for free. I nursed because I know that that's the best thing to do for your child, but also because not nursing is really expensive, right? But I would have never thought, oh, maybe I would buy bottles and that would be tax exempt. And I think that people who are from lower income communities are extremely resourceful, and we figure out how to provide for our babies, but we do it in the most free and a cost-effective way. And so I guess the part of me is wanting maybe to understand more about, when we at the state pass something like this, how do we ensure that communities with the greatest needs who should benefit have this information? And I wonder if there's maybe, and I can talk to Representative Engen maybe offline in this, because I do feel very much in the same heart space as he does around this, but really, like, how do we do this better? Because those who are the most vulnerable in our communities will be the ones with the least amount of information, with the least amount of access to think about, boy, I can buy these things and I'm going to get a, you know, $5 tax credit on this, right? They're not thinking that. And so how do we do better as a state, as a committee, in ensuring that the things that we do actually get to the community members who might need it most? And I don't know if that's for you or something we just rhetorical and we not just think me. About or or our staff, whoever that might Bang be.
It's for Representative
whoever wants to answer that. It's, maybe it's more philosophical and it's something that, you know, weighs heavy in my heart all the time.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Representative Herr. I agree with you. You know, at the end of the day, if they don't even recognize that they're getting the savings, but it's happening, that's a good thing. If they go and purchase an item and they're saving money, That's going to be felt when, you know, the 68% of Minnesotans who are living paycheck to paycheck now have more money to spend at the end of the month before that next one. And so if we want to talk about educational tools and resources to make sure that this gets to where it needs to go, I'd love to talk with you offline. But at the end of the day, this is going to provide savings, whether they know it or not.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And I would love to take you up on that. I think my point is that they're not going to go to the store to even entertain buying this thing, so they're not getting a benefit, right? Like, I never even thought to go to the store at that time to get something because that was not ever an option for me. So I can, that's really my point. But I would love to chat with you more offline on this, Representative Ingen. I think it's a good idea.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure where this question would go, maybe to research or Representative Ingen might know, being a JV player. What I'm wondering is how many other states have used this exact same policy in their tax laws? Do we have that?
Representative Engen or researcher Representative Engen?
I know, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt. I know Kansas, Iowa, Florida, and Kentucky are four states that have looked at some form of a sales tax exemption on infant care items. Whether it's the same language or not, I do not know. I can get back to you on that if that's information that you'd like to know. But I know that they have passed in recent years, at least Florida, Iowa, and Kentucky, some version of this.
Would anyone from research have an idea, Ms. Hagler?
Mr. Chair and members, as Representative Engen stated, there are those states that do have exemptions like this, and they kind of vary between which products are included and which ones aren't. With sales tax, you have to be really specific in the statute to list out all of the items. So I don't know that there are states that are exactly like this, but I can get back to the committee.
Okay, Ms. Hagler, would this have anything to do with streamlined sales tax? Would it affect that at all? Something like this?
Mr. Chair and members, no, it shouldn't.
Okay. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you,
Chair. Representative Lee and then Stevenson. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will be the last time I speak on this bill. But seeing as I think you kind of want questions for the department, I have a question about administering sales taxes like this and streamlining sales taxes, especially if, you know, you're like a thrift store. Often low-income families will shop at thrift stores. And I'm curious because I shop there, my mom shopped there for a lot of stuff, but I'm curious about their inventory and, like, you know, whether their stores, because they are, you know, like a second use store, actually code for the inventory correctly. And if you know, perhaps some folks might be missing this exemption if you shop at places that maybe, you know, don't code the stuff. So I hope the department is listening, maybe understanding that question, or I don't know if this is a question for Ms. Hagler to just explain, like, kind of what happens and, like, if this is something that happens often in this, like, second market.
Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lee, I don't know for sure how exactly the department gets the message out to retailers that certain products have become exempt. That would be a good question for them. But theoretically, if you go to one store and it's exempt, it should be exempt at another store as well. But that would require the retailers to make adjustments to their POS system. And there might be some retailers that have organizations that do that for them. But I think maybe the department might be better able to speak to the administrative side.
Maybe we could bring the department up for that. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And Mr. Chair, Representative, those are good questions. We do, when there's a new tax or if there's a tax change, we will send letters to taxpayers. We will put notices out on our website. We'll do glove deliveries. We'll do tax loss summaries, making sure taxpayers know their obligation. And then we do, you know, do audits. And during audit, if we see that something is mislabeled or misrepresented, we will do education and corrections at that time.
Representative Lee.
Just one follow-up. I'm just curious, like, I mean, if you could also explain, like, what is the incentive of doing audits? Like, would you choose to do that at, like, a Target versus, like, a Salvation Army or, like, a Goodwill? I'm just curious because when you go to Goodwill, it's, like, you know, the bag of, like, $5 things, right? And so I think that would be helpful.
Ms. Bears.
Representative, our Chair David's representative, we don't, there isn't, you know, it's not like we would, these are random audits, so it's not that we are targeting certain areas or not, it's random.
Representative Lee? Good. Does the department have a position on this bill?
Chair Davids, no, no position.
You have very strong feelings both ways?
Davids, I do not.
Okay, okay. Any other questions from members? If not, I'm sorry, Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Representative Engen. I'm just curious, infant eating utensils, would that include bibs?
Representative Engen.
That's a great question. Actually, if you're moving to make an amendment or talk offline about inclusion of that, I'd be more than willing.
Representative Stevens?
Mr. Chair, no, I was asking because Representative Szczynski said that the virtue of this was that it was only for things used by babies, and people often tell me I should have a bib. And so I was wondering both. About that. But
Chair Stevens, I had to go get a tie today because my oatmeal got it pretty good.
Yeah, Chair Davids, I think that this is something we should really think about if we're thinking about the structure of this bill. But I did want to just... I don't know, Chair, is this the time to offer comments, or is that later that we're going to have comments on the bill?
Sure.
Now, is it?
Your comments would be now, and then we usually have the author wrap up.
Okay. I wasn't sure if we were still doing questions to the department. I just wanted to comment that I do think that the spirit behind or the intent behind this bill is appropriate and something that I think the whole committee shares, a desire to make it more affordable to raise children in Minnesota, which is one of the reasons why I'm so proud of the things that we did last biennium, including paid family medical leave, most notably, which I think has a huge impact on the cost of raising children in Minnesota, but also the school lunches. You know, as I have kids myself, they're not babies anymore, much to my chagrin. But, you know, it is a significant saving to working families to not have to pay for lunches. But I do have concerns about this particular bill. You know, the governor has a proposal to broaden the base of the sales tax and lower the rate, which I strongly support for a variety of reasons. But one of the reasons is because the narrower we make the base of our sales tax, the more volatile it becomes. And I think in a minute we're going to hear about a different bill, which troubles me, the Tabor bill. And one of the reasons why that bill troubles me is because we have seen such wide fluctuations in forecasts over time. And I think that this is, you know, a small thing, right? I'm not going to say this is going to make the sales tax, like, combustibly more volatile. But it's a step in that direction. And I think we should be cautious about that. I think we're going in the wrong direction when we're narrowing the base of the sales tax from a budget perspective, because I think it's going to make our revenue more volatile. And I think, as Chair Gomez and others have pointed out, there are other ways that we can provide financial relief to new parents, and maybe more targeted. As an aside, when I mentioned the school lunches, it reminded me that a lot of people in the legislature expressed concern about the school lunch bill because it was paying for the lunches of wealthy people. And now we have a bill that I think a lot of members have rightly pointed out might be disproportionately beneficial to people of greater means. Certainly, I was having a lot of memories of my own kids when people were talking about, you know, borrowing or acquiring baby supplies from friends and neighbors. And now that my kids are a little older, I'm on the giving end of that. I'm giving away, trying to give away. If anybody wants any of my stuff, help me clean out my garage. But
do you have any golf clubs?
Baby golf clubs? That's is that going to be on? Is that going to have baby golf clubs?
That was an omission. It should have been on there.
Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to comment on the bill.
Well, thank you. We'll go with Chair Gomez last. Any other comments? Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I think this might be a question for nonpartisan staff, and you'd think I know after being on taxes for a while, but sales tax and remitting it, which I've done before too, can get really complicated. Can you remind me if we have a income threshold on any of our sales tax exemptions or credits?
Mr. Chair and Representative Joaquin, no, there are no income thresholds on sales tax exemptions.
Chair Joaquin?
Thank you. Just was wondering.
Okay, we'll wrap up with... Chair Gomez.
Thank you so much, Chair Davids. I sometimes ask Zach if he's here as the chair of Ways and Means or simply a junior member of the tax committee. But, in his expression of this sort of tax nerd truism that you want to, as much as possible, expand the base and reduce the rate, I really appreciate him bringing up that point of like how it is that we build the fairest and most equitable tax system that we can. I kind of already spoke to the substance of this bill, but I just wanted to say something, because we're about to pass this bill off to Ways and Means. And certainly that is the right of this committee and of you, Chair Davids, to lead your caucus to do that. But, I don't want to belabor this point on every bill that comes through this committee, but we are talking about passing. We don't have the February forecast yet. We do not have an adopted budget resolution. One of the powers for those new members of the committee, one of the powers of the House in tax policy is that all tax bills originate in the House of Representatives, not in the Senate. And as Chair Davids knows better than I, that is a power of the House that we protect. And so we are not in the habit of passing early tax bills off the floor of the House of Representatives that do not have negotiation and agreement behind them. There aren't even Senate files for these bills that we're going to be, theoretically, that we're going to be passing out of our committee. And so I just want to point out that this is, an unorthodox series of actions that we're going to be taking in taxes over the next 5 weeks, that it is a series of actions that, were you not going to meet the fact that you need 68 votes to pass something off the House floor, if there was a majority that wanted to pass these tax bills, that we would be really abdicating our responsibility and giving up a lot of our power as the House of Representatives, which Chair Davids and I both protect fiercely, right? Because that is like part of the way that we ensure that we have, tax policy that works for all Minnesotans. And so if you are looking for which tax bills are serious and which are not over the next 5 weeks, look at what we're passing and what we are laying over. Because no tax bill that we pass out of this committee, out of Ways and Means Committee, will actually be passed off the floor of the House because you need 68 votes to do that. So I just want to point out that we have a lot of work to do together. And I look forward to, Chair Davids and I have had a lot of conversations about how it is that we're going to support our shared work this session, which is passing a bipartisan, balanced budget. And, efforts like this, it's fine, do what you will, but this isn't pushing us toward that end. And, I'm going to not do anything to imperil our ability to do that actual work together, which is going to start in March after the special election settled, after we have a February forecast, after we hopefully have a budget resolution adopted. But these things that we're passing out of committee are bound for nowhere, and I look forward to figuring out how to put together a bill that we can all get behind and that helps move us toward our real job, which is not, having spirited floor discussions. Our real job is figuring out how it is that we can work together, Republicans and Democrats, House, Senate, and Governor, to pass a balanced budget so that we can meet the needs of Minnesotans. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Chair Gomez. Your points are very well taken, and one might think we don't be moving this too fast. The vote today will be to go to Ways and Means, but the upper hand is still on either side that you have to have 68 votes. So we have to have 68 votes to get something passed, and I hope you and I working together doesn't start March. I hope it started a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And I think it has. And we'll talk about some of your concerns offline. But your points are very well taken. And as far as going to Ways and Means, it goes to the floor. It doesn't become law if there's no agreement with the 68 vote. So with that, we have one more bill. Representative Engen, any last comments?
Yes, thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Lead Gomez. Seeing as we need bipartisan support to pass any bill this session, this one received unanimous approval 2 years ago. I think that this is a serious bill, especially to the single mom who's struggling to get by. I hope that there is the appetite for us to get this work done. And I think that when we're weighing the state interests versus the interests of the everyday family, we should start putting the family first. We should start recognizing that families are struggling to get by and that for a long time the state has sought to increase its own savings accounts while not allowing families to do the same. So I'd ask for a yes vote, and I appreciate the lively discussion today.
So with that, I will move House File 18 be passed and sent to Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Engen. Thank you to your testifiers. We now have House File 4. Representative Johnson, if you want to come before the at the testifying table, please. You are far too good.
She's helping.
She laid it on pretty. Okay, Representative Johnson moves House File 4. And just to see what we're looking at here, we have three folks listed to testify: Ran Lee, Ms. Nan Madden, Eric Bernstein. Is there anyone else that would wish to testify on this bill so we kind of know where we're at? Okay, thank you. So Representative Johnson moves House File 4 be recommended to pass the committee and sent to the Ways and Means Committee. Please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, and I believe there is an amendment on that. Do we need to deal with that first?
Yes, we should. And this is to get the bill in the shape. Where's the amendment? Oh, it's the 4A2 amendment. Okay, and this is just to get the bill. Usually in tax committee, we let the author get the bill the way they want it, and then we can rip it to shreds after that. Okay, so I will, Representative Johnson moves the 4A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Okay.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended in the shape the author would like. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I just want to let you know I have not broken tradition as far as bringing treats. Treats were brought and shared previously on this. And if you doubt it, there are Facebook pictures on it. And as we all know, if it happened on Facebook, it's real, right? So, but anyway, so I just want to bring this forward. One of the items, a top item when I was going door knocking was the issue of affordability. And we just touched on in the previous presentation here, we just talked about how unaffordable and how expensive it is out there, members, for people who are new parents, which I remember how expensive it was, and kind of Representative Herr kind of touched on it, the same reason that my wife decided, or we decided, to have our kids breastfed was for cost and for health. And so this is something that touches on that and affects on that. And one of the items, ways when I went door to door, was how do we help people keep in their homes, stay in their homes, help afford their home, food, and everything like that. And what this does is this House file brings forward to us a constitutional amendment to be put on the bill on the out to voters. To return the surplus, if there is a surplus of over 105% of the projected forthcoming year. And so this will bring it back, as I think it was roughly around 4 years, the surplus was sitting out there, and people were wondering, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? How is this gonna be spent? What this will do is, in the future, if there is surpluses going forward, this will put it back. If approved, send it back to homeowners, whether it is, or taxpayers, whether it's in form of property tax relief or income tax relief. And so that was what this does. One second, I just have to get to my sheet here. So excess tax collections would be determined based on comparison of forecast revenues to forecast expenditures for the fiscal biennium corresponding to legislative biennium. Projected revenues that exceed 105% of projected expenditures would then be transferred to this new account. Legislature would be able to choose which of two most recent forecasts to use for purposes of the revenue expenditure comparison. The legislature would be required to appropriate money in the tax relief account, which biennium for property or income tax refunds, or to offset the cost of one-time tax reductions. Refunds and tax reductions would be limited to taxpayers' liability for tax. So basically what this does is, instead of creating new ways to spend surpluses, this would actually put it back to the people who created the surplus. And this would help in situations like we heard earlier, that would benefit greatly to Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let's go to witnesses so we get them, and then, of course, we'll have member questions of the testifiers and of the author. So we have Rayanne Lee, Legislative and Coalitions Director, Americans for Prosperity. Welcome to the committee again.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for having me. For the record, my name is Rayanne Lee. I'm the Legislative and Coalitions Director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota. We are the nation's premier grassroots organization. We are a community of millions of concerned citizens advocating for solutions based on proven principles. We thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4. I did also submit a letter along with an attachment that details our position a little bit more. We applaud the proposal to return surplus funds to taxpayers. We believe that Minnesotans, not government officials, are the best stewards of their money. As many of you know, grassroots is our game, and the Minnesotans that we have spoken to at the doors have told us that they feel like their wallets are growing thinner while the government has grown faster than ever. And quite frankly, a lot of them feel like they are not getting the bang for their buck. And, you know, a lot, some of them have even said, you know, I am not an unlimited ATM, and these price increases, these costs are hurting. So I think that at its core, House File 4 opens up the dialogue to discuss Minnesota's notoriously high tax rates. As we have seen over the years, we are overtaxed, and we've actually seen surpluses that are more than double the amount of the entire budget of the state of Nebraska. And while we are supportive of this money going back into the pockets of Minnesotans, we would challenge you to think outside the box and say, what if they never had to lose that money in the first place? So we would propose considering a trigger so that when there are revenue surpluses, there are rate reductions that go into effect, or even bracket consolidations. Furthermore, we also do recommend an overhaul of the way the state budgets. At its core, we really would like to focus on removing the volatility. So, for example, using a five-year look back that doesn't put us on an annual balance. And it really puts the state on a more reliable track, so we don't have the volatility. A few other high-level points. We would propose limiting spending to trend revenue growth along with Minnesota's economic performance.
Ms. Lee, if we could testify to the bill before us.
Thank you.
Kind of going far afield here.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, we are just proposing some challenges. You know, we understand that this is a complex matter with many ideas and solutions. And I think the core, you know, is there are better ways to budget. So we are very grateful that you are hearing this bill. I never thought I would hear the word fun and taxes in the same sentence, but here I am today with you fine people. So we very much appreciate it. Responsible budgeting is important to everybody, no matter their political views. And so we thank you for your work.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Lee? Okay, our next testifier is our friend Nan Madden. If you could please join. Thank you, Ms. Lee, for your testimony. Nan Madden, Minnesota Budget Project Director, Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. If you could please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I am director of the Minnesota Budget Project.
The mission of the Minnesota Budget Project is to identify and advance public policies to make Minnesota a place where everyone can thrive, regardless of who they are or where they live. And I thank you for the opportunity to share our deep concerns with House File 4. We have a longstanding position that budget and tax decisions should not be made in the Constitution. That position is informed by the experience of going through a decade of frequent budget deficits in the 2000s and the harm that has been done in other states that have such limits. I've provided the committee with a handout specifically about the damage done by the Tabor limit in Colorado and another more generally about negative effects of such limits. The legislature already has this authority to use projected budget deficits for tax rebates or tax cuts, and our current system allows that to be done in a public debate that weighs the alternatives and implications of those decisions. This constitutional amendment takes away the ability of Minnesotans to influence the tax and budget decisions that impact their lives. It instead turns those important decisions over to an arbitrary formula. This limit would also undermine accountability. It circumvents meaningful public debate, and it makes it more difficult for the public to hold elected officials accountable for the impact of their decision. Constitutional revenue limits prevent public investments from keeping pace with growth in the economy or changes in our population. So the ability to fund schools, train our workforce, invest in Minnesotans' health and well-being, and maintain other services would be diminished over time. And as we have seen at other times when state revenues were constrained, Minnesotans want these services funded. So the responsibility pushed to local governments creates pressure on local property taxes, increases tuition at public colleges and universities, and other kinds of workarounds because the public do want to see these services funded. Constitutional limits also restrict the state's ability to respond to a crisis, to rebuild when coming out of a recession, or to respond to a substantial change in circumstances. This proposal would not just slow growth in the size of the state's general fund compared to what it is today. In a recession or other tough times, revenues drop, and policymakers have to make tough decisions to balance the budget. This amendment essentially locks in the impact of the recession and makes it more difficult to recover. This amendment could also make it harder to invest in roads, water treatment, and other infrastructure because it could raise the cost of borrowing. Bond rating agencies want to see that states have flexibility to respond to changing situations, but that flexibility is constrained by such amendments. In short, this proposal does not give you more tools to respond to the needs of Minnesota residents. It instead ties your hands. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Madden? Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll now go to Eric Bernstein, Coalition Director, We Make Minnesota. And welcome to the committee, sir.
Chair Davids, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Bernstein. I'm the Coalition Director of We Make Minnesota. We are a coalition of labor and grassroots organizations united in support of public investment for a more just and equitable state. We believe that public goods and services from education and healthcare to roads, parks, and libraries are the foundation that a strong economy and a prosperous society are built on. We advocate for the policies that support the state's long-term budgetary strength and stability. Thank you for the opportunity to share our perspective on HF4, which proposes a constitutional amendment to create an automatic tax cut in the instance of a projected budget surplus. Our members oppose this bill because it will weaken the state's ability to fund essential social and physical infrastructure, and it will take decision-making power out of the hands of democratically elected lawmakers. The effect of this policy would be to exert a downwards ratchet on state funding, which would deplete state resources, weaken our infrastructure, and rob the public of important investment opportunities. The state already can and has often used budget surpluses to issue one-time rebates or permanent tax cuts, but leveling such cuts at a fixed rate and putting them on autopilot will only limit the legislature's ability to respond to contemporary context and pressing social priorities. It also ignores the necessary relationship between economic growth and public spending. Surpluses result most often from a strong economy, which both benefits from and depends on commensurate public investment. This is how we ensure public services keep up with technology and public sector wages keep reasonable pace with those in the private sector. Otherwise, we would live in a 21st century with 21st century wealth, but 19th century classrooms and libraries. This policy erases the possibility of collective prosperity that should be the goal of all societies, and that has long been a calling card of Minnesota specifically. In closing, I'd like to address the foundational premise of this policy, which is that less public spending is always preferable. Our coalition, which includes public teachers, healthcare workers, and local government employees in every county of the state, find that disposition highly objectionable. Our members in schools and hospitals and correctional facilities, they work extremely hard to keep this state running. They don't always oppose tax cuts or support tax increases as much as I might like them to, but the notion of a permanent blanket policy is hostile to anyone who provides or depends on public services, and that's all of us. So we urge you to vote no on this. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. You want to stick around just a second in case we've got questions. Questions for the testifier? I guess you're way ahead of me. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot. Before we go into member questions, I just want to announce what the agenda looks like for tomorrow. And some of you may have seen it, but we have a Rapinski bill up, Social Security subtraction, Representative Wiener and the Browerville bill. Representative Harder has a Watertown. I think we might have Representative Smith kind of take the lead on this. There's sales tax exemptions. Sales tax, that one is. And then, of course, a fine people legislation that we've, how many times we've passed this out here? The appurtenances, the taxation of attachments and appurtenances. So, Representative Norris, you had that? Somebody had that. No.
Representative Brand.
Brand had, okay, that's right. Representative Freiberg.
This wasn't to the agenda for tomorrow. Are we at member questions at this point?
Not yet.
Okay.
We will get there very quickly, I think. Chair Gomez.
Just wanted to say that we're not going to take it to the Supreme Court or anything, but the DFL tax team's position on treats that were delivered between January 14th and January 24th are that I believe the term is moot, Representative Stevenson. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson, she's got a good point here. She really
I
does.
Heard the rules were good.
Those were unconstitutional treats. Unconstitutional treats.
Good stuff. Well, we'll have to negotiate that. Well, and then also two other things before we get into member questions. Give me some DFL bills. We'll be looking for them. We want some DFL bills in here because it looks like I'm so partisan, and I'm really not. So
we have a fifth tier income tax.
Well, like I said, the next week, we've invited Commissioner Marquardt. He's going to make an agency presentation first, and then he's going to present the governor's budget. And I've offered him as much time as he needs to do that because we want to hear about the agency. We want to hear about the governor's budget proposal. So that would be into the next week, and then we'll get you tomorrow what we're looking at for Thursday. So that being said, let's go to member questions. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you to the bill author. So thank you for bringing this bill forward. I know the motion was to refer the bill to Ways and Means. Are there any other I'll have a follow-up, and then just wondering if there are any other committee stops planned.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then also to response to the question regarding the representative brought up, I would be afraid that my response would give the impression I'm trying to influence votes if I said that. So,
whatever it takes, man. I mean.
So
okay, Representative Johnson.
So thank you. So as far as going on to Ways and Means, I believe that is the only direction it was going to go after here. Is that
correct? I believe that's correct, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. I was wondering because House Rule 4.15 says that bills proposing constitutional amendments have to be referred to the Committee on Rules before it receives its second before they receive their second reading. So, and then also, I know bills proposing sometimes the Secretary of State's office has determined that there's a cost of I think from the ERA discussion, but there is a cost of about $5,000 that is often borne by the Secretary of State's office. So, and actually, I'm not sure at this point whether that's in the jurisdiction of the Elections Committee or the State and Local Government Committee, but I feel like there might a referral to one of those committees might be in order also.
Very good point. I'm not sure right now if we should go to Ways and Means then to Rules, but Ways and Means is usually the last. No, Rules. If we go to Ways and Means, you can still go to Rules. No, other way? Who's our... what we have is a genuine conundrum, a quandary, if you will, a real-life dilemma. I mean, I want to do this right, and there must be anybody in research that might have a thought on that? Because Representative Freiberg brings up a good point. Do we need to go? No, you go to Ways and Means, then Rules, right?
The rule, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let's see what
the rule just says before it receives its second reading, it's silent as to the order that that happens in, whether there's a standard practice of the House is not something I know offhand.
Maybe if you send it to Elections.
Representative Anderson.
Yeah. If you send it to Elections, it'll have that time, and you could put a little tiny fiscal note on it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gomez.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just have been in touch with our LD, with our legislative director. He says that Rules is traditionally, to Representative Freiberg's point, the last stop for constitutional amendments before they hit the floor. So maybe a referral out of Ways, if it needs to go to Ways, to Rules would satisfy that requirement, but...
Representative Freiberg, thoughts?
That's fine with me. Then do we, I know there is also this issue of there is sometimes a cost to constitutional amendments for putting it on the ballot. I just don't know if that's...
And wouldn't that be covered in Ways and Means, Representative Freiberg? The cost? Do we have a fiscal note? Ms. Templin, save us here, please. I'm drowning.
Mr. Chair, a fiscal note has been requested for House File 4 with the 2A amendment, and it is in process right now. The preliminary fiscal note was only completed by the Secretary of State, and that estimate did not show any cost. But it's preliminary.
Okay, was this in our packet? Mm-hmm. Members, if you could look in your packet... it does say zero cost. Oh, that's the revenue. Yeah. Mr. Clayman?
Mr. Chair and members, just to confirm the comments from Representative Freiberg and Representative Gomez, a referral to Rules after Ways and Means would fulfill the requirements of Rule 4.15.
Thank you. Thank you for that information, sir. But very good point. Very good point. So let's go that route. Let's see. We had Representative Smith and then Stevenson. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Johnson, welcome to Tax Committee. So I think, just generally, I'll be honest, I think this is bad policy, but I have just some clarifying questions because I cannot get my head around how this would actually work. So bear with me a little bit as I ask you some questions. The first one, it was noted in the revenue estimate. In 1.11 of the bill, you used the phrase, to the property and income taxpayers of this state. Could you clarify definitionally what you mean by that? Is it people with liability? Is it, I'll just leave that question open-ended. How do you define that term that isn't defined in the bill?
You can have House Research take that one so we get the definition here, unless Representative Johnson wants to take it or...
I would love to hear from the experts first before yeah. I guess I'd have to clarify more anyway, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Clayman?
Mr. Chair and members, income and property taxpayers would be any person subject to or any person that has a tax liability under the income tax. For property taxpayers, there may be somewhat of a gray area, but under the property tax chapters, the property taxpayer is typically considered to be the owner of the property. So it would be property owners who have a property tax liability and income taxpayers who have an income tax liability.
Representative Smith.
That's helpful. And a follow-up on that same line of questioning, obviously we have commercial and industrial tax levies that we do at the state level, would they be eligible for any sort of refund through this program since technically they're property taxpayers, corporations that own
Mr. Klayman?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, I think that's the case, because if as long as they're a property owner and they have a property tax liability, the legislature could appropriate money for refunds, for instance, for those property owners who have that liability.
Representative Smith?
Okay, so large corporations will be able to benefit if they own land in Minnesota from this. Okay, I just wanted to be clear. Second question, when is the actual money going from the general fund to this new fund that you are creating? Because there's a lot of projecteds in the language. Is it immediately when the budget forecast is given? Is it that day the money is taken? Is it based off of the actual revenues we have and the projected expenditures, or is it off of both projections?
Ms. Templin? Or Mr. Klayman?
Mr. Chair, members, so the likely what would happen is that the funds that if there are any funds that meet the requirements to be transferred into the account, that would happen presumably, you know, as soon as practical. And likely what would happen is that there would be a certain amount of those funds that would just be set aside in the general fund, so they wouldn't be available for the legislature to appropriate for any purpose other than the constitutionally prescribed purposes.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. And this is a question for the bill author, if you could. So 1.15 or 1.15, 1.16, 1.17, it says, in the account, the amount of projected revenues in the general fund that exceeds 105% of projected expenditures as determined, and then it goes on. And then if we turn the page to the actual question that is before the people of Minnesota, 2.1 through 2.3, you drop one of those projecteds. It says, funded by the amount of projected revenues that exceed 105% of just expenditures. Why is there no projected expenditures on the actual question before the people when the mechanism in the law is to do just that?
Representative Johnson.
One moment, I'd like to read this. I left my glasses back at my desk, sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative, could you repeat the question, sorry?
Representative Smith.
Yeah, sorry about that. I did go fast. So on that first page, 1.15 through 1.17, the verbiage or the actual text is deposited in the account of projected revenues in the general fund that exceeds 105% of projected expenditures. So there's two projected there, it's both the revenue side and the expenditure side, I assume from either the February or November forecasts. And then, but the actual question that is determined here on the second page, 2.1 through 2.3, it says the Minnesota Tax Relief Account funded by the amount of projected revenues that exceeds 105% of expenditures. It leaves out that second projected. Why is that worded in that way?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I'm just looking here because we also had that amendment that came in. I'm just looking to see if that made any adjustments to that, because I know, and I could be wrong, that we added also that it could be either forecast, I believe, also for either November or February that was included there. I don't have an answer for you. That's something. Thank you for bringing that up. That's probably an amendment or something that we can make a change to.
Any thoughts, Mr. Klayman, on the Smith question?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, that may just be a technical error in the bill on line
2.2. Representative Smith?
Can I offer a verbal amendment?
Absolutely.
I think it's important that if this is going to go forward, which it seems like it will, the people know that the expenditures are not done yet. This is also part of a projection, which I think is part of the problem with the policy, to be quite honest. So I would move to amend line 2.2 just to include projected in front of revenues.
Expenditures,
excuse me.
Thoughts from the author?
I would agree that word would make sense to be in there, yes.
Okay, Representative Smith moves that on line 2.2 after 105% of, we insert the word projected before expenditures. Any question? Is that it, Mr. Representative?
Yeah, I think.
Okay. Any questions on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Smith. Any further questions?
I have some more sort of policy questions, but those are my clarifying questions, so I'll go lower on the list.
Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am wondering, you know, I think a lot of us probably remember what it was like to be in the legislature in 2020, where I have a strong memory of being in this building and having a conversation with some folks in the afternoon one March day about how I guess we're not shaking hands anymore. And then later that day, I got an email from the speaker saying, don't come to work on Monday. And we were gone due to the pandemic for a long time. And that was a huge event shaping the state's budget that came out after the February forecast and had massive implications for the forecast. So, you know, my question for the bill author is, you know, what happens when you have those exogenous events? To give one example that maybe would be to focus the conversation, you know, we have right now a very active federal executive branch that's making a number of decisions that I think will have direct bearing on the state's budget and making them kind of in real time, including putting tariffs potentially that, you know, will increase inflation, decrease GDP, thus affecting state revenues. But the most, I think, direct example was we had a memo issued by the Office of Management Budget freezing federal funding, thankfully, two federal courts found it unconstitutional the following day and freezed it. But, you know, Minnesota gets, as I'm sure members know, about $2 billion a month from the federal government. And if that had happened, you know, let's say that happened February forecast this year comes out on March 6th. If that had happened on March 7th instead of in January, and this was in effect, what then? What happens? Is the legislature able to do anything in response to something that happens after the February forecast, or are we just stuck?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So basically, what we're working on is the what if scenario, right? And what if something happens? So are you actually asked, where would the money come from if all of a sudden it wasn't there? Would it come from what has already been set up? And I apologize if I'm not as legislatively astute as you are and been around for as long as you have. But the money was there also for previous, don't we have a $3 billion set aside that was set aside from part of the surplus, and I could be wrong. I'm getting caught a little bit on this. But if something happened, would that money have been there anyway? We spent the surplus, correct? We created enough programs to spend the surplus so it's not there anyway. So then, basically, if we have a crisis, we'd have to deal with that crisis that came up, because what happened to the $18 billion surplus along with the $10 billion in extra taxes? The $18 billion was spent. Is that there now that we could go back and access it if we run into the situation that you're describing with the current situation with the federal fund coming in? Can we go back and get it? How is that different? And if I'm wrong and I'm not understanding it correctly, please help me understand where you're going with that question.
Representative Stevenson.
And Mr. Chair and Representative, of course, you know, the budget decisions that were made in 2023 are within the legislature's purview to revise and adapt as situations change, and I imagine that we will revise and adapt decisions we made in the past. The difference here is you're writing into the Constitution that the legislature can't touch this money. You're setting aside some money that we would have no control over. And in fact, one of the concerns that I have, I'm glad you bring up the budget reserve, because I'm kind of wondering about the interplay between this and the budget reserve. The budget reserve, you mentioned, is $3 billion, and that's where we are now. And we're there in part because one of the policies we have is that when the November forecast out, if it shows a surplus, a portion of it is diverted into the budgetary reserve. And I'm a little unclear because it's also unclear which forecast we're going to be talking about, November or February. I guess the legislature gets to pick. But if it were the November forecast, what's the order of operations here? Do we take the money first from the put it into the budget reserve, or do we first do this and then do the budget reserve? Those things are the interplay that I don't understand from this. But to get back to my question, which I think is a really important one, and I'm not sure that I've heard an answer yet, you know, the legislature has a lot of authority to change appropriations and change programming in response to events, but you're taking some money here and freezing it. So what happens if after the February forecast, we have a crisis, whether it's a pandemic or a federal government that's freezing funding or something totally different that we haven't thought of, what happens then?
Representative Johnson.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you for the Mr. Chair, Ms. Representative, thank you for the question. So the question I have here back, I guess, is what do you do now? So if you put the money off and you give the money back to the people, it didn't exist. Right now, the budget is set up to basically be balanced, correct? So if we do have a crisis and a situation that comes up, we have to deal with it at that point. How is that much different than if the money was not there to begin with?
Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't mean to be repeating myself. The difference is that right now we have the full state budget at our disposal. All of the revenue that's generated by the state we have access to and the ability to use however we want. You know, I think projected revenues in the next biennium are north of $66 billion, and we have all of it at our disposal. This amendment would take some of that money, potentially a significant amount, and put it off limits. Can't be used for any purpose other than payments to taxpayers. That's the difference. And that's why I'm still not clear. I'm still not hearing an answer to what we would do. I think maybe the answer is, doesn't matter, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with not having the ability to respond to those exigent events with the degree of flexibility that we have now. But that's the question is, what are you going to do if President Trump freezes federal funding on March 7th and Minnesota suddenly is facing a $2 billion a month shortfall, you know, and we have the inability to make our Medicaid payments, which we are required by law to make, by the way. We don't have any flexibility on providing those services to people. And we, if this passed, you take a big tool out of our toolbox. I can leave it there, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. I've got this room reserved tonight from 6 to midnight. But I'm not going to use it. Scared myself there for a second. So with that, members, I've got a list. It looks like the Greg Davis Fan Club. Mm-hmm. It's just really long here and distinguished. Great questions. This bill is not ready to go out of tax committee. We'll be rescheduling it. I don't know what date, so just look at your agendas to see it. And I have a great list of folks here with questions, so hold those thoughts. I'm sure you will. And so with that, we're going to lay this bill. It's still in the tax committee. We're going to lay this bill over at this point. It'll be brought back at the discretion of the chairs, some of us here. Thank you for a good tax committee meeting today. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.